I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to Kate Bush singing Wuthering Heights, inspired by the famed novel by Emily Bronte. Did you know there were actual flash mobs who do this in groups? Her choreography on Kate Bush's choreography on this, it's so popular. Who would have thought such passion would be inspired by three sisters living in a small parsonage in rural Yorkshire? We're going to talk about the Bronte sisters today with two of the actors portraying them and the artistic director of Bag and Baggage Productions, who has brought the play Bronte to Hillsborough for its Northwest premiere. Stay tuned as we listen to more of Wuthering Heights. This is Stage and Studio. Everybody's doing their Kate Bush here. I can see everybody kind of mouthing the words. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the studio, our artistic director of Bag and Baggage Productions, Scott Palmer. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And two actors, Morgan Cox, who plays Emily Bronte. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Oh.
And Jesse Walters, who plays Anne Bronte. Welcome.
Good morning.
All from production aptly titled Bronte by Polly Teal, about the famous literary siblings. Welcome all to stage and studio. Now, this is the Northwest premiere of Bronte, the play, and it's being performed at the Hillsborough Public Library in a promenade style throughout the library. It runs March 3rd through 26th. Scott, what do you mean by promenade?
Well, promenade means basically that rather than having everyone just sitting in one location at the library, we're actually going to be asking them to move throughout the performance from place to place. So there are a total of five different performance locations in the library, which is a beautiful building. It creates an incredible ambiance for a story about these three literary sisters.
And it is a literary play,
it
so
is.
It makes sense to have it in the stacks of the library.
Absolutely. In fact, I think a couple of the actors have said that working in the library has that atmosphere and environment has influenced their performances in ways that they've never experienced in a theater space.
So they move from scene to scene in different parts of the library.
Correct. So we actually take the audience from the sort of foyer of the library through into, you know, sort of the kids' books area and into the romance section and through the quiet reading room and all around. There's seats in some of those locations so people aren't standing the entire time. But we really wanted to take advantage of the natural location and the environment of the entire building. So rather than sort of have them just sitting and looking at one stack of books, we wanted them to see the entire space.
Well, I personally love a more active style of
Me
theater,
too.
Moving from room to room. And I understand you can only have 60 people at each performance, right?
That's correct.
So it makes it more intimate.
It does. And it's, I mean, there's a couple of really practical reasons for that, right? Is having to set up 180 seats in five different locations, much less the space that's required. But it is a much more intimate show. So rather than have our audiences sort of struggle to get connected to these siblings and their father and some of the great characters that appear from the Bronte novels, we really wanted to make sure you could literally reach your hand out and touch a petticoat in this production.
But not recommended.
But don't, yes, not recommended.
Not,
certainly not if you're reaching out to touch Anne's. She'll just smack you.
Ooh, so.
I don't bite your fingers off.
And then it becomes interactive, which is another form
right.
of theater that I like. But, you know, it seems to me that it encompasses another sort of British literary tradition, which is the walking tour.
Correct.
Yeah.
It does feel very much like that. And I think the Brontes, all of the sisters talk very much about traveling. Emily is, you know, she talks so much about the importance of walking and her environment and walking around the parsonage. And she basically, at one point, I think she says, it doesn't matter where I walk as long as I'm moving. And I think there's a part of that, the journey of the Bronte sisters traveling through their life that kind of lends itself very easily to a promenade style show.
Well, now, this was not only an artistic decision, Scott, but one of necessity because a theater that you've been home to recently, the Venetian, was recently sold.
That's correct. So unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your perspective, we think that having to move Bronte to the library, although we love the Venetian and have been there for 9 years. The pending sale has really thrown uncertainty in terms of whether or not we would have been able to perform there. So we made the decision to move Bronte to the library. I think that is a great choice, that the space actually lends itself much more comfortably and creatively to the story, but also unfortunately means we've had to cancel the last show of our season, Noises Off, which was really the big show.
And that's a big show because that has a huge cast and it requires a huge set.
Giant set, yeah. Tons of sardines, right? Like there's just so much. So
it's not even one set, it's like one set on the outside and then one set that turns around.
Yeah,
right? The play within the play and then the backstage.
There's a revolve and all that stuff. And it was our final show. It was going to be our final show planned at the Venetian. We had purchased our own building. We're in the middle of renovation, which is super exciting. So we wanted to kind of throw a big party for the end of our time at the Venetian and really make use of that giant space. And unfortunately, that's just not going to happen. So we've had to cancel.
Wow. So what is in store? I mean, you're sort of in limbo land right now?
We are a little bit in limbo.
For next season.
Yeah. I mean, we're in the middle of construction. The project is probably, the building is going to be completed in about 4 months.
So
our intention is to be open in September of 2017 with our first show of next season. We always do an outdoor summer Shakespeare. So we are going to be outdoors in June and July. So we don't need a building for that. We just need, you know, good weather.
And September is just right there.
Yeah.
So that's not
so
that bad.
It shouldn't be too bad. It really is just this one incredible, unfortunate accident of timing.
But it isn't unusual. I hate to say it's probably devastating for you, but venue does seem to be an issue here in Portland too.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we know a number of theater companies and performing arts groups
have
who
lost
are really
spaces.
Struggling to find in this sort of real estate economy and the price of real estate and real estate investing.
But it's hard to believe it's happening in Hillsborough too, but it's really expanding there too,
it
isn't
is.
It?
That pressure, I mean, it's not just Portland, it's all over the place, right?
And all over Oregon.
Yeah, I think a year and a half ago no one would have expected this to be a problem out in the burbs, right? But because the market in Portland is so high, that is really beginning to push real estate pressures outwards to the suburbs. And I mean, where we are in downtown Hillsborough is really far away, right? That's a really long distance from the heart of downtown Portland. But downtown Hillsborough is experiencing an enormous amount of growth. And so we're really under pressure.
Is it becoming a bedroom community of Portland then?
It is in some ways. I mean, I think one of the interesting things about Hillsborough is that it's such a diverse community already, because in large part, and there's not only a large migrant population that lives there, but also a lot of people who are moving to Hillsborough to work in the high tech industry from a lot of places all over the world. So, and the demand for livability, access to the arts, access to, you know, entertainment, all of that kind of stuff is really focused on people want to live, work, and play all at home. And I think those pressures are really being felt in our community.
Well, we hope to hear more news about the rest of you know what you're doing in September? But you're not ready to announce it?
I'm not going to tell
you. He's not going to announce it, folks.
Okay.
Well, then we'll have to keep
it's going to be really cool, though.
You have to keep me posted.
I will.
And as we learn more about, you know, what you're doing next,
absolutely.
Next season. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm DMA Roberts. My guests are Scott Palmer, Artistic Director of Bag and Baggage Productions. And with him are two actors, Morgan Cox and Jesse Walters, from the Northwest premiere of Bronte by Polly Teal. And you can find out more at bag-and-baggage.org. Now, let's talk about the Brontes. I'm so excited to talk about the Brontes. Charlotte, Emily, and Anne Bronte were three of the most important writers in all of Western literature. Oh, yes, of course they are. And though they lived quiet lives in a very small parsonage, which I have been to twice, the small Yorkshire village of Haworth, England, they wrote since they were children. In fact, they were very, very young when they started writing. They wrote fantasies about imaginary countries, and they went on to create works such as Jane Eyre, Wuthering Heights, and The Tenant of Wildfell Hall. Now, Scott, the play Bronte's was written more than a decade ago. What made you want to do this in Hillsborough?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Bag and Baggage has a commitment to exploring not only the classics of English and American Western literature, dramatic literature, but we also have a really strong commitment to ensuring that the lives and the voices of women artists, whether they be writers or playwrights or characters, are really sort of highlighted in our work. We did Emma by Jane Austen last year, and we wanted to make sure we got all the greats from English literature. Polly Teal, when she wrote this play 10 years ago, it was a huge hit for Shared Experience, the theater company in the UK, and it toured all over the United Kingdom. And it is just such a beautiful lyrical, it feels a little bit like Polly Teal was writing specifically for Bag and Baggage, a small cast of actors playing multiple characters, combining both a sense, a slight, you know, kind of realism and naturalism with a sense of the imaginative and the conceptual. It just kind of rings every bell for Bag and Baggage. So we decided that we really wanted to feature that those women and those characters and that playwright and kind of really bring the lives of the Brontes to the fore. People don't really know very much about their...
Well, yet there is a huge fan base for the Brontes. And in fact, there's a Bronte Society that's like has chapters. I think there, you know, who knows? There might be one in Portland.
There is. There's one in Portland and awesome. In Forest Grove.
Well, that's good to know. Well, so unlike Jane Austen, this is more gothic, more emotional, more passionate and erotic as far as Wuthering Heights goes, especially. Mm-hmm. Morgan and Jesse, were you both Brontes fans before this? Or have you become because of this?
Well, I have definitely become more so since working on the show, and particularly I play Emily Bronte, and
she's very passionate.
She's very passionate, and I've become extremely attached to her just from an acting perspective. You know, all three of them were isolated, but Emily seemed even more so, and she, even though the traveling and being out and walking, she really did all that at home around the parsonage. She did not want to go off and travel to London. She wanted to keep everything for herself. She wrote for herself. She kind of didn't want to be exposed.
She was a little bit more reclusive, but I mean,
definitely.
The sisters did go to become governesses and did that thing. Did Emily? I think she did too. I mean, they were all sent away for a while and went to Belgium and all that. But after that, it seemed like she wanted to just stay at home.
Yeah, exactly. So she just felt so passionate and private, and I love the way that she used her imagination to create these extremely passionate characters. They just created these worlds that were so full. And when you think about where they came from and the fact that Emily in particular did not have a relationship, you know, she did not experience the romance that she wrote of in her own life. So I just am extremely fascinated by all that.
How about you, Jesse?
I did not grow up reading the Brontes, but it's been a lot of fun just with this process. And often I come across works working with Bag and Baggage where I get to do a lot of sleuthing. You know, it's
so did you start reading the novels? Or?
Yeah. I mean, we brushed on them. But I mean, as far as with the time we have, it's like script. And
right.
I always talk to Scott about it. It's like, okay, what can play? Like, what's your Bible and what goes in from there? But, you know, reading up on Anne, she was at Thorpe Green, so where she was governess, you know, more out of the house than any of the sisters. So she went to go, you know, make her own world. But she also used that material to write her novels, Agnes Grey as well. So she's really interesting. I find a lot of parallels with her. She's, you know, the youngest child. She's female. She has this, you know, great God-fearing, God-loving energy about her. She's also a social justice warrior. So there's a lot of great themes about strong feminine women, educated women that I can relate to. So
they were all pretty pro-feminist and feminist writing. Anne is sort of the underlooked Bronte sister. And, you know, I have read The Tenant of Wildfell Hall. I haven't read Agnes Grey, but she's a damn good writer, too, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In her own right.
Well, and I think, I'm going to misquote this, but when she wrote The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, they said it was when the character slammed the door. It's like the door that closed across Victorian England. So it rang true for a lot of women at the time. So
yeah, and, you know, it's just interesting to think about, you know, how passionate the characters were, too. But what makes them fascinating is the constraints of their time. They they had to write under pseudonyms because, mm-hmm. you know, because they were women and they got published as men at first, and then only Charlotte married. They basically stuck to the parsonage, though, in Yorkshire. Yet their books had these passionate characters that promoted feminism, bucked Victorian society, and there's this fair amount of eroticism, mm-hmm. especially in Wuthering Heights.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole Heathcliff and Cathy thing mm-hmm. was like major, and it was considered amoral. at the time.
There was, mm-hmm, I mean, know? An enormous... It's shocking. What's interesting about it is that so many of the responses to Jane Eyre were, you know, this is the best piece of literature ever written in history, right? People loved it. Everybody thought it was absolutely brilliant. And then the other Bronte sisters, sort of their novels came out, and what was very quickly found was that female and women literary critics of the time were the harshest critics on these books, even though they were unaware that the writers were women. And there's actually an actual scene in the play where the Bronte sisters are going through their reviews, and they're reading the reviews, and people are saying, you know, it's filthy, it's nearly pornographic, this is not the way we should be reading, you know, why would you use a swear word when you can use a dash? And you know, the harshest critics of the time were women, even though these books were really focused on making female characters primary characters and determining their own destiny. And so it's a fascinating sort of bucking of the system. And the fact that they had to pretend to be men in order to write these very, very feminist novels is really fascinating to me.
What time period does this play cover?
1825 to 1850?
Yeah.
So it's basically their writing career.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it focuses, you know, a lot of things that I've seen on the Brontes, be it, British or BBC specials, you know, they'll cover like a certain period of life, like while they're writing their novels. But this script particularly covers a lot of the younger lives of the Brontes. So their childhood, their young teens, and then they get into writing the novels, and then they kind of die.
And the relationship with their brother, Branwell, who is so key everything that happens in the Bronte family, him being the sort of the only son, all of the pressures of the father and the family focused on him.
Well, he was the golden boy.
He was the golden boy.
And there was high expectations, which he never delivered on. He could not paint as well as he wanted to. He couldn't write as well.
Yeah, couldn't hold a job.
And so he became an alcoholic and drug addict. So he is a tragedy. And yet, I have to think he influenced the sisters a lot.
Hugely.
Because all the eroticism, absolutely, all the things came, a lot of it came from his affairs.
Correct.
You know, and his experiences.
Well, The Tenant of Walthall Hall is essentially an imaginative take on the reason that Branwell sort of ultimately had to come home and stay home and become reliant, right, on the sisters for their for his survival and the family's continued survival.
And yet they were all very close, even though they fought a lot.
Family, right?
Yeah, their family.
Yeah. There's something about family that you can love them so hard, but they can also just take you to wild depths of misery. You know?
Well, you have a scene for us.
I do.
And can you set it up for us? Morgan and Jesse, can you set that up for us?
So this is a scene in kind of present time in the story. So Anne and Branwell have just returned home from Thorpe Green. Branwell's been dismissed, and Anne had given her notice. So this is really Anne's first time back in the home for a long time. So she and Emily are having a quiet moment while they are essentially waiting for Branwell to drunkenly stumble home from the bar so they can get him into bed and they won't wake father up. So
this is a scene between Emily and Anne Bronte from the play Bronte by Polly Teal.
I've been so long away, I am not myself.
Shh, you are home.
There have been things I dared not look upon for the ache. Stars at night, rivers, even the dogs I would not pet for fear of weeping. The springtime made me sick with longing, as if I had swallowed a stone and it had stuck in my throat.
You're here. You're home.
Your letters I would sometimes save for days, wanting and not wanting that sweet torture. To hear the voice of one who knows you when you are surrounded by strangers, by those with whom you have no sympathy, to whom you are an oddity, a curiosity. I cannot blame them, for I have become as strange to myself as I am no doubt to them.
I don't believe it.
No, don't make me cry. How are you? Tell me about you, everything. Let me forget about myself. Tell me.
I have taught the hawk to return.
You have?
Last week. It was terrifying to let him go. I thought he had gone. I kept calling and calling, and then, just as I had given up hope...
Tomorrow, I will see for myself.
Sometimes, when he flies, it's hard to describe. It's as if I were with him. As if I were no longer contained here, but in everything. I'm writing. Every morning I wake afraid that it will leave me. I know not where it comes from, but it still comes. More like a dream than a story.
You will read it to me. We will start tomorrow evening.
And you? You said in your letter you had finished the first chapter.
I cannot promise it has any merit beyond that it saved my sanity, but even that is not yet certain.
What is it about?
A woman who is married and bound for life to a drunken adulterer. I intend it as provocation to those who would have women treated as children. The more I see, the more I am certain we ruin both girls and boys by insisting on the frailty of our sex. While young men must endlessly prove themselves, we are kept like overgrown infants in the nursery of life. Our talents wasted, our energy squandered on meaningless tasks, peering out at a world we will never know.
And that was a scene from Bronte by Polly Teal at Bag and Baggage Productions. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. And the Bag and Baggage Productions is here. And with them are two actors. We have the artistic director, Scott Palmer, and we have two actors, Morgan Cox and Jesse Walters, from the Northwest premiere of Bronte by Polly Teal. And we just heard a scene. You can find out more at bagthelletterandbaggage.org. The show opens March 3rd and runs through March 26th. And I have all that info at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Branwell, we had talked about earlier, died at 31, and Emily died at 30 a few months after, and a few months after that at 29, all from TB, mm-hmm. you know? And so you see the closeness, all of that, you know, all within a year, they all just kind of left the earth, and then Charlotte lived to be 38. It was tragic, short lives, but in the midst of that, they produced such wonderful work, and I really do believe that Branwell inspired all of that too.
I think it's interesting that, you know, Branwell comes home and he can't hold the job, he can't keep the job, and so there's something about an immediacy. It's not just, oh hey, let's like publish these novels. It's like, oh my gosh, we need to put food on the table. It's a life or death situation to create this incredible art. And that they become celebrities within their own very short lives. I mean, it's really pretty unique.
Well, it was, you know, it was a short life expectancy back then anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, the village of Haworth was just filled with, you know, diphtheria, typhoid, all these diseases. People had consumption all the time, which was, you know, tuberculosis. And so they weren't expected to live that long, you know. And in fact, they lived longer because they were higher up on the hill on Haworth in the parsonage there. But, you know, their longevity was in their works, and I don't know what the secret is about it, but people still, you know, I think Wuthering Heights is still on the bestseller mm-hmm. list, you mm-hmm. know, and people still reread that, and I do quite often. It's a great novel.
One of the things that's really fascinating about the way in which Branwell becomes sort of central to all three of the sisters' works is, and I think Morgan mentioned this earlier, that there is an imaginative treatment to their personal experiences, right? So Branwell was dashing, he was handsome, everyone had high hopes for him. They all believed he was going to go make his way in the world and become this very important character. The family, the three sisters, were trained to believe that and taught that. And so you can see those kind of dashing hero sort of tropes that they incorporate into their novels based on the way Branwell was presented to them within their family. Branwell was an alcoholic. He was a drug abuser. He had mental health issues. He became very ill. There were moments of great mental illness, madness, they would describe. And you can see characters in almost all of the novels that reflect in an imaginative way the personal experiences that the Bronte sisters had in their own small home that they drew out imaginatively to become sort of much larger in scope. So I think there's something about the connection to their own deep personal emotions that they then broaden to a sort of more imaginative scale.
And on a more actor personal level here, how is it, Jesse and Morgan, to be able to perform this in Victorian dresses? And of course, it's in a library, you know?
Well, I am very lucky. Emily actually does not have to wear a corset.
She didn't
or a
want
hoops,
to.
Or,
she didn't want
or a
to.
Hoop skirt,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
They were uncomfortable, and they did not suit her.
Good for her.
Yeah. So she does not have to be as uncomfortable and constrained as the other two.
Yeah, with a hoop skirt, you really have to watch those stacks,
we
right?
have to
in the library.
2 feet. 2 feet anywhere you go. I love it. I love the juxtaposition of, you know, being corseted, the full skirt. I mean, the whole regalia. Definitely Anne is in that. But amidst such, like, modernity in the library. You know, we the other night, instead of, you know, a prop table behind someone, like, oh, we'll just use that book return cart, you know. So we're trying to incorporate the modern world of the library, right. And as well, like, our set is minimal. Like, we have a chair, three chairs, four chairs, and a table that are kind of in each space. But I love it, you know.
They didn't have much furniture in the parsonage either.
No. They're pretty simple. You know?
It was a very small parsonage, yeah. Very small space.
I do want to make sure that it is, although a very simple set, we aren't, I don't want people to sort of get the impression that they're going to be wandered through the sort of, you know, halogen lights of a library.
Oh, you're
right?
Setting the tone.
We
the
are,
mood.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it is nice. A full theatrical production, yeah. Right? There's full period costumes. We have a
so
live
So the library's letting you bring in lights
correct.
And music?
Oh, yeah. So we have complete, we're turning all
That's
the
so
lights
cool.
off. And yeah. We have a live violinist who's playing works, both Anne and Branwell Bronte when they were children. Branwell learned the flute and Anne learned the piano. And so I actually worked with the folks from the parsonage.
Nice.
So
nice.
They have songs in their songbooks that we've translated into sort of from piano and flute into violin. So songs that the two Bronte siblings both learned on different instruments are being played throughout the show.
Lovely.
We have lights and lighting effects mm-hmm. and all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, I don't want people to think, oh, why would I
oh,
go to
I don't
the library?
Think so.
Right? No, it's the full deal.
It's really even cool. If it were, it would be
yeah,
cool.
It would still be cool. It's going to be even cooler because there's cool. lights right. and sound effects and stuff.
But that space, I mean, I get there a little early and right before it closes and it's flushed with people. And then the library closes and it's empty and it's just magical. I can't describe it. It's really quite incredible. And to be able to play in that space is really unique.
Well, it sounds like a great experience all the way around. Bag and Baggage Productions partnering with the Hillsboro Public Library for this production, Bronte by Polly Teal. The show runs March 3rd through the 26th, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays at 7:30 p.m. All shows are at the Hillsboro Public Library, the Brookwood branch. That's located at 2850 Northeast Brookwood Parkway in Hillsboro. For more info, bag&baggage.org. You can also call their box office at 503-345-9590. I have links to their event at stageandstudio.org, kboo.fm/stageandstudio. Well, Scott Palmer, Morgan Cox, Jesse Walters, so good to have you here.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for joining me today and visiting KBOO and chatting about the Brontes. You know, it's been fun, and I personally am looking forward to seeing the show.
Great,
and seeing
so
you
much.
Perform this. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Tave Fache Drake. I'll have the show online later today at stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio, as well as the podcast on iTunes. Do subscribe. Also, like us on facebook.com/stage_studio or tweet me at @stage_studio. We're going to go out with more Kate Bush. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts.